what's going on, what's happening in Africa. This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. cheers. Clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely,
so stay tuned. Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you, all of you, for joining us today. Now, young people represent the fastest growing demographic in Africa. Many are already economically active, some motivated by necessity to help their families, others to make ends meet in economically challenging times. Others are just realizing the power that lies within ownership of wealth that you create from bottom up without seeking employment, but just creating your own wealth. So all around Africa, we're witnessing a major paradigm shift with young entrepreneurs demonstrating a resourcefulness and inventiveness that is unprecedented. So with access to the right opportunities like skills, mentors, social networks, technology and finance, there is a great opportunity and great potential for young people on the continent to be the driving force that we've been looking for economic growth and social progress, and just maybe become the leaders of a future they are often told will come later and not sooner. So the question is, what do they need? We explore this question on the show as we have done previously. Now, there's no one single solution to this, except that we all know that the basics have to be covered. Young entrepreneurs in Africa need the same basic tools as their counterparts anywhere in the world. Such basic skills like finance, an environment that encourages personal growth, etc. We will look at this in detail later on in the show. But let's start off by listening in on how young people view the concept of entrepreneurship in Africa.
Entrepreneurship is a little harder because it's a business that either you can start it with a capital or you can get assistance from the government or from other sectors who are concerned about the business elaboration, you know, like other humanitarian organizations who are able to, you know, give funding. Like, for example, it's called these Microsoft loans, banks which loan people. Those are the things that you can actually start off. And you are not literally just shying off, but they have the difficulties of thinking of how to start.
My name is Anthony Moga in Juba, South Sudan. When I look at the situation of youths getting away from businesses or they feel shy, in South Sudan, what I look at, many youths are not informed. They really don't have much idea on what they can do. The ideas are still limited. Maybe perhaps with the effect of the war, many things they're expecting the government to give them.
Why African youth shy away somehow? It is the discouragement of the whole business. You find that if you don't have a capital, how do you run the business?
For me, there are no statistics that tells me that young people don't want to do business. Challenges, maybe because there's no capital how to start the business. I'm quite sure there are young people who actually want to be independent, they want to do their business. If you can see in the street of Juba, you have this black market. Young people, it's all young people.
Welcome to Upfront, the Voice of America. We're still talking about entrepreneurship, young entrepreneurs, the prospects, the challenges, and the opportunities that are available for young entrepreneurs on the continent. And so statistics show that Africa is home to one of the youngest populations. We also continue to see an emerging movement of young entrepreneurs all around. But one of the setbacks to this type of demographic dividend, because if you have those types of numbers of young people, it's what is called a demographic dividend. That's usually a good thing, depending on the opportunities and resources and the environment under which they operate. But one of the setbacks to this demographic dividend is access to education. Now, some governments and non-government organizations are focusing their attention to this issue. One of the non-government organizations is the MasterCard Foundation, which recently committed over $500 million to empower talented young Africans from disadvantaged communities. And they want to help empower them lead change in their communities. This past month, we saw the first graduating group from the MasterCard Foundation Scholars Program. One of them is Eddie Gicheru Okech from Kenya. He founded the organization Peace for Africa and Economic Development, PAD. His organization works with young people in the grassroots to start their own income-generating community enterprises.
So, first of all, we went through a massive training on just the concept of youth economic empowerment and trying to build a critical mass of young people who could take this to the grassroots levels, to their communities. So we've trained about 400,000 peace ambassadors who are basically young entrepreneurs championing the idea of economic empowerment with young people. And then we went a step further now to build about 35 projects that are model projects that are working in different counties in Kenya. So that's what we've been able to achieve so far. But again, I've been very critical in terms of peace building through that kind of network.
Okay, these are youth-led projects, the income-generating projects led by these young people, started by them. What are some of the interesting projects that you can tell us about, specifically the income-generating projects they've been working on?
Yeah, so basically we integrate a very unique model that is based on three pillars. Mm-hmm. One is developing those projects in what is called FANACA. FANACA basically means economic prosperity.
Okay.
And then from developing them from FANACA, then we do something called the JUSI, which is basically exposing young people to other opportunities in different communities, as well as different ways of scaling up their projects and solving their problems in their communities in another pillar called Ujuzi. Uongozi. So Uongozi basically means leadership. So from doing one project to developing it, to employ more young people, and then to solve a problem in your community. So it's a very grassroots approach, but also a very comprehensive capacity development approach that we're taking towards developing this project.
So how do you decide which projects to develop, and what has been some of the successful ones?
So we develop very different kind of projects. They could be educational projects, they could be basic business enterprises, they could be talent promotion, but then how do they generate income to scale up the levels and also to be replicated to employ more young people. So one example is a young man called Abdiaziz, who started a tax shop, a small shop that has grown into this big wholesale enterprise that also incorporates M-Pesa businesses. Right now with about a turnover of about $4,000 per month. And from that, because he's still a very young man who could easily be benefited into the violence, he has employed about other 10 to 11 young people that he's working with. But the more part of the story in the Ujuzi at Uongozi pillars of now using your project to solve community problems, Abdiaziz has gone further to, you know, create a soccer academy for street kids as well as just disadvantaged young people in his local community.
Okay.
Training about 60 of them with full funding for that program, and you know, now taking them to other programs like playing in national leagues and also going to prison as far as Norway.
Now, before the last elections in Kenya, there was a fear that there would be a repeat of the ethnic violence of 2008, but that didn't happen, and indeed you had a peaceful process. Now, youth are usually either victims or perpetrators in this situation, but it has been said that those who have better prospects or have something to look forward to or something to do, like a job, a business, etc., are less likely to take part in activities that destabilize their society or their community. Well, what did you do leading up to the last elections that prevented a repeat of the conflict we saw in 2008?
It's interesting that you ask that, because towards the election, actually, I took almost a whole semester off from campus to come and work with the PAD team. We are right now about a staff of 10 people that we have in PAD right now, full-time staff. And we worked so hard in terms of using the model of economic empowerment in the grassroots communities and developing these young people who are running these enterprises as alternative leaders for their local communities. The belief is if they take charge of their local communities and become alternative leaders, it has a cumulative effect in the entire country. So I'll give you an example. Like, for instance, Abdiaziz now mobilizing about 60 young people of the potential of voting in the next 1 or 2 years. The idea of hope that from seeing the success of their business project, so from another young man who's running fish ponds project or somebody who's running poultry projects, from just seeing that success, there is that hope of economic emptiness being addressed. So there's incentive for young people not to cause chaos so that they can have a peaceful environment for us to continue availing these opportunities to them. And again, we do this with a lot of partners like ECG Bank, Kiva, and other organizations that help avail other opportunities in the grassroots. So that idea of hope in the grassroots that can help young people know that their time is not done, and there is no only hope in the political domain, but there can also be hope in them taking care of their communities and actually developing projects that can change their lives. I think that has been very key. But apart from that, now more visibly in the election time, they also form a team or a network of peace ambassadors in their grassroots communities, you know, doing extended work like advocacy, civic education, doing peace campaigns, which we had some of the major peace campaigns last year, championed by all these network of young people. We trained about these entrepreneurs, about 470, that were leading a team of about 3 million, if I'm not wrong. So that kind of campaign on peace building was very key last year, and especially mounting towards the elections. For the 3 months, were very critical. Young people were doing this peace campaign and peace conference in the grass.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. We're still talking youth entrepreneurship on the African continent. And we just heard from Eddie Gichero Okech from Kenya, a MasterCard Foundation scholar, recently graduated, by the way. He's going on to Yale University for graduate school very soon. Now, I also spoke to Rita Roy of the MasterCard Foundation, who told me that the scholars will be prepared and empowered to lead economic growth and social transformation across Africa. I will share with you our conversation in our upcoming shows. But first, I spoke to Rebecca Nasimbwa, a young entrepreneur from Uganda. She's also a graduate of the same program. Rebecca's take on entrepreneurship is that even though you can be trained to be an entrepreneur, many of the qualities of an entrepreneur are really inherent. They're inborn. And that training does to you is that it gives you the tools and confidence to be able to take the necessary steps to be an entrepreneur, to start a business.
Entrepreneurship is a personality thing to me. Mm-hmm. You can learn it. It's a personality thing. You need to have that self-drive to want to make a bigger impact, to want to make a bigger change in your community.
Is it something that can be taught? Is it something that you can learn?
Yeah, you can learn to be an entrepreneur, and that's what this MasterCard program has given us. They have given us, especially here at MSU, they give us these training sessions where entrepreneurs here in the U.S. come and talk to us. They motivate us. They train us basically on how to start and manage your own business. So that is one thing I'm proud of that I've learned and going to use it.
Okay, now somebody will say that part of the conditions are still existing and that you're going to have to go back and still work under those conditions, and things are not really changing, or if they're changing, it's on a very slow pace. Does that discourage you?
No, it doesn't. Actually, for me, negative things give me more energy to kind of see how I can get through to get where I want to be. So I know the challenges, and when I went back for my internship after my first year in my master's program, I saw those issues, and actually I think I may know how to address them. I don't have to solve every problem, but I need to see a way through to get where I want to be.
My name is Anthony Moga in Juba, South Sudan. When I look at the situation of youths getting away from businesses or they feel shy, in South Sudan what I look at, many youths are not informed. The ideas are still limited. Maybe perhaps with the effect of the war, many things they're expecting the government to give them.
I think government has a huge responsibility of making sure that its people are standing on their own terms of business, and that can be achieved by maybe setting up deliberate policies of encouraging people to do business on their own.
I understand that they do so because they are lacking incentives and role models.
I have a different view on that one. It's not that they shy away from being entrepreneurs, but they don't have the right prerequisite to entrepreneurship skills. I will give you an example. It's just recently that most of the schools in Africa have introduced entrepreneurship education in their syllabuses just now. So it's about that they don't know what entrepreneurship is about. I think the government should still incorporate entrepreneurship subjects starting at the lower level, from the senior primary schools up to secondary schools, and then they should try to put it as a priority in the college, so that whoever comes out from the university should have learnt the entrepreneurship, so that he should be able to find the right fit himself or herself.
Thanks for joining us on Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg. We're talking about African youth and entrepreneurship on the show today. Now, research shows that many young people on the continent often have these great creative ideas but are lacking access to the basic requirements to enact those ideas, to start a business. There's a general lack of access to financial services, business connections, education training, and mentorship and support systems. Sadly, that's the truth, that many young people find they don't have access to those essential tools if they are to make a success of their business idea.
Nadia, financial institutions are always averse to providing loans to youth-led businesses because they seem risky. And while the developed world ethos of, you know, fail often and fail fast is often associated with learning and is encouraged, this is not the case in many African countries. Let's listen to a conversation that I had with two young leaders from the African continent who are going to school here in the USA. Yive Irangunda is with Emerging Leaders and Entrepreneurs Rwanda. I spoke to him with his colleague Tim Kaboya on entrepreneurship and leadership in Africa.
Rwanda stands for Rwandan Emerging Leaders and Entrepreneurs. This is an initiative that we started to encourage entrepreneurship in young Rwandans, because we believe that in order to bring prosperity in Rwanda, we need to encourage entrepreneurship, starting by the young people, because we believe that, considering the Rwandan population, 42% are below 14 years old, and the median age is 18 years old. We believe that in order to build a long-lasting development, we need to involve the young people to be part of the growing economy of our country.
How do we get our governments or even our institutions to accept the concept of youth entrepreneurship?
Personally, my own personal belief, I think government, in a way, they are sort of where they level the playing ground. If we look at, say, America and maybe the startups that come up, most of these are being funded by the private capital, private firms investing capital in them.
Right.
Yeah. So personally, I believe we need to look for ways. What we're looking at through Rwanda is to connect through various organizations that are working in Rwanda and those that are in America, they are the ones that provide the capital. Because in the end, it's, the government is only going to level the playing ground. But it's the private firm. If we can get, looking at a case of point of, say, Rwanda, if we, Rwanda or even the rest of Africa, if we can get a company, say, such as MTN, to start up a competition whereby they invest in young entrepreneurs.
Right.
That is going to be the list for this. Companies like that, because they have the funds to do that.
Let's talk a little bit on the policy level. What would you love to see governments do on the policy level to encourage young entrepreneurs like yourself?
I would like to see governments encouraging young people to come up with ideas and kind of giving them that credibility that they need before they step in front of, say, the bigger companies whereby they will be getting the funds. There's also the culture aspect to it. You know, there's the culture back home whereby I would say when I was studying in high school, I would look at myself and think, let me study hard, finish school, get good grades, and once I get a degree, I can start looking for jobs. There's that mindset that also needs to be changing. So I would think there is a need for sensitization programs geared exactly towards that.
Nadia, as the discussion about entrepreneurship in Africa gains momentum, it's important that we ask how youth entrepreneurship can be developed as a potential pathway to spur job growth. Because as we see the numbers of unemployment on the continent, we realize that maybe young people could actually be part of the solution.
Big businesses are taking steps to minimize their workforces so that they can pay less salaries. And that's where we find small businesses coming in, entrepreneurs coming in, opening their own business, their own economically viable ideas that they're now acting on, and providing work then for others, for neighbors, for young graduates who struggle to break into the market and to get into big business, to get into the corporate field, to get into government. Entrepreneurship is playing an undoubtedly important role in filling that or in breaking away at that big unemployment figure that we see in so many African countries.
Many of the youths, perhaps, they expect more of this thing from the government. They are not so much creative. And when I look at the government, I think the government has to do a lot to restrict, to control the market and open maybe a lot of access to loan. And they should engage the civil society, the youths, to understand how even to get loans and how to set up proper business. Because many of the South Sudanese, they don't have the knowledge of even maintaining a business.
My name is Lam Tungwar, chairperson for South Sudan Artists Association, as well as general manager of Nyakron Culture Center.
They have started in a small way as entrepreneurs by engaging themselves in the market. But in the long run, maybe they didn't get a good turn in or a profit to move on. They find that they are putting more cost of their time, more cost of the little money they have, and they are not getting a good return to even pay themselves. So that means the entrepreneurship or the business or the trade itself became useless because you're not getting any outcome of it. You don't see the benefit. So then you start going to lobby for seeing a way how you can engage yourself with big businesses. When it fails, you just don't want to go back there until you have a backup. And that's why people actually fear to move in.
So instead of the authorities say, okay, these are the young people, let's help them, even though they're doing it in a very black market, they should be helped.
Maybe to set up more funds, like public development funds, where youths can get loans to start various businesses, and maybe for banks as well to open up, maybe to reduce their rates so that maybe many youths become interested to obtain loans to enter into businesses. And
I think young Africans shy away from being entrepreneurs because of lack of knowledge. Yeah, most of them are not well trained, and most of them lack that advice from lack that expertise to run business. So they end up not be willing to involve themselves in business activities.
Welcome to all of our listeners, and we're talking about entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship among young Africans. That's our topic today. Now, we know there's a need to create a dynamic ecosystem of actors and resources that incubate business, that facilitate access to capital and business development services, and also, Jackson, that provide assistance in the form of mentorship and peer-to-peer support.
Youth entrepreneurship is a powerful mechanism that taps into the creativity and drive of young people. And this is not just in their lives, but also in their communities as well. It's an exciting area to explore as we stretch the boundaries of how young people in Africa can engage with their economies on their own terms, by the way. We should explain that this should be on their own terms. Welcome to Upfront, Simba from Zimbabwe and Penifa from Zambia. I want to thank you both for being on the show today. I'm going to start off with you, Simba. Let me ask you, as a young entrepreneur yourself, what are some of the challenges you have of entry in starting to do business in Zimbabwe?
We face a number of challenges in Zimbabwe, and some have to do with cultural issues, and some just have to do with greater macroeconomic forces that determine certain issues within the business environment. And I'll start with cultural issues. Agriculture and agri-processing in a large scale has been a business run by more established firms in Zimbabwe, for the most part. So when you have a new, relatively young individual coming in, it's hard to be taken seriously. So that just becomes a challenge in terms of entering the system, getting certain approvals and things of that sort. On a more macro issue and how that determines my business environment, you have, you know, the perceived country risk that has a bearing on the cost of capital and the cost of my working capital in terms of running my business. It's not easy to have access to capital, let alone well-priced capital. And that has a bearing on my ability to produce, function, and to get produce out into the market competitively.
Okay. Penifa, let me get to you. I know Simba mentioned agriculture as being one of those sectors that are really hard to get into, given that it's kind of entrenched, also the cultural barriers. But are there any sectors that are more absorbent to the young entrepreneur?
I think there's some sectors which have not been fully exploited in not just Zambia, but I think most African countries. As young people, we tend to normally focus on things that probably have been already done, and we want to start off on a very, we give ourselves challenges I'm not able to meet. Hence, my very quick recommendation to most of us who are just starting off is to see what area would fit you best and not try to compete with those that have already made it really big. When you talk about specific sectors, for Zambia particularly, agriculture still offers a lot of room for investment, because most people who are in agriculture will focus on maize farming, which is because Zambia has got maize as a main cash crop, but we've seen little investment in people who would probably grow crops like rice, which are still very viable, and you can still make ends meet from whatever sales you can make. And there's still a lot of opportunities in many other sectors. Tourism is one such example I could probably give.
And on that note, I want to thank all our listeners and all our contributors to the show today. We'll catch you again next week right here on... Yeah.